You're listening to the documentary podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Myra Anubi, and I'm here with a bonus episode of my podcast, People Fixing the World. This time, we're opening the polls on how to make elections better for everyone.
People fixing the world.
I'm Myra Anubi, and this is People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service. Every week, we choose to focus on positive things that are happening all around us, things that are making our world a better place. Speaking about choice, today we're finding out about ideas that are helping even more people cast their votes and select the leaders they want.
And as Big Ben strikes 10, the exit poll is predicting a Labour landslide.
Counting is underway in the biggest election ever held. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi eyes up a
In South Africa, the ruling ANC loses its majority for the first time since apartheid.
Mexicans vote in an election which is almost certain to result in the country's first female president.
These are just some of the elections around the world so far in 2024. The UN has described this as the biggest election year in human history. Billions of people are getting the opportunity to vote in over 50 countries, from huge elections in the United States to voting on the tiny island of Tuvalu in the Pacific Ocean. It's a good feeling knowing that so many people are getting to exercise their democratic rights. But elections are often periods of turmoil, violence, corruption, intimidation, and some people just don't feel like their vote counts. So I thought it would be a good idea to find out about ways to make elections work safely and securely for as many people as possible. So today we'll hear how women in Uganda are encouraging peaceful elections, find out how people in Estonia are using technology, and even how people vote in space. But first, how do you bring democracy to some of the most remote places on Earth? Our first solution takes us to Australia's Northern Territory. Here, a population of just 250,000 is spread across a vast area that's more than five times the size of the UK. And as a country has mandatory voting, making sure everyone is registered to vote is a massive job. The Northern Territory Electoral Commission spends hundreds of hours travelling thousands of kilometres to sign voters up to the democratic process. Letitia Lemke of SBS World News in Australia travelled with them to see the programme firsthand.
This is the sound of democracy at work. It's early morning and I'm on board a small charter flight taking off from the Northern Territory's capital of Darwin. Out the plane window, I watch as the landscape morphs from ordered roads and buildings to snaking rivers and spectacular rock formations. I'm with a team from the Northern Territory Electoral Commission that's travelling more than 400 kilometres east to the remote community of Ramanginning in East Arnhem Land. It's part of a remote engagement program to boost voter participation.
Single engine aircrafts, helicopters, depending on the locations that we're visiting. So we have a policy position where there is 10 people or more on the electoral roll, we will provide them with a voting service.
The NT Electoral Commissioner, Kirsten Kelly, is overseeing the program.
It's a big logistical feat to plan for remote elections or elections generally, but in remote areas where you don't have a lot of accommodation options and you may not have access to infrastructure to deliver the service.
After a 90-minute flight, we touched down in Ramanginning. It's a community of about 800 people living in the town and the surrounding outstations. Electoral Officer Michelle Connolly explains that the team will spend the next 2 days here.
So what we're hoping to achieve is awareness on the elections that are coming up. The age group that we're looking at is between 18 and 35, targeting them, getting them enrolled, educating them, just getting some education around how to vote, things like that.
Encourage them young people to come in and see us.
It's a very young population, and Michelle says many residents are completely disengaged from the democratic process. They're not on the electoral rolls or even connected to social services. She's here to try and change that by making these systems and processes more accessible.
I think it's really important just so that we engage with remote communities just to spread awareness and to get people engaged and start thinking about the elections and get new enrolments.
A pop-up barbecue is fired up at a park in the heart of town where electoral officer turned chef Neville Khan fries onions and sausages under the watchful gaze of a crow. This basic dish is synonymous with Australian elections. It's actually referred to as the democracy sausage here. For Neville, it's a meal that offers an opportunity for an important conversation.
I believe it's extremely important to empower people about the Australian democracy and being a part of it, and explaining about how their vote counts and why they need to vote.
Working from a laptop and fold-out tables, the electoral officers are able to check people's details, updating addresses where necessary, and enrolling those who aren't already on the list. They talk through the different elections held in the Northern Territory, explaining the functions of the Northern Territory government in making laws and budget decisions that affect people in the bush.
The NT government are the main provider of services, etc., for remote regions, so it's important to empower people about the democracy system so that they can have a vote and understand how their vote counts.
Local elder Normand A. Maringu says Ramenginning is a long way from the halls of power in Darwin, and the politics of government doesn't always seem relevant to people living here.
You know, it's a little bit about where we educate ourselves to come and be involved in some elections.
So does that help then, I guess, having the Northern Territory Electoral Commission here to, I guess, get people on the roll, thinking early about these things?
Yeah, it kind of takes a slow process to get them to understand, because English is for the fifth language, and to able to get understand and absorb what the system works like.
This community is very remote. Tropical rains routinely cut road access to the community. A glance at the most recent census shows jobs in this community are limited, and most families are doing it tough, earning around $150 US a week. East Arnhem Land Shire Councillor David Warrior says people here face significant challenges that politicians need to help with.
The big issues are like houses and funding for the house. There are some people are missing out houses. It is a big problem. And the road's not good. When it rains, there's a lot of bump.
But remember, your vote is your secret. Nobody else can tell you who to vote for. It's only your choice.
Neville Khan is explaining about the voting system to a group of rangers. It's just after sunrise and the rangers have come back from shooting buffalo. He tells me that a lot of work needs to be done to get the message across to everyone.
In this particular community, in the last election, I think it was about 48%, so that's just under 50% of the people that are enrolled to vote who are voting. But that's not talking about the people who aren't enrolled.
Three teams of two electoral officers have been charged with trying to turn that around, running hundreds of engagement programs across more than 80 remote communities. The gruelling schedule will take them from the crocodile-inhabited wetlands of the Top End to the iconic Red Centre at the heart of Australia. And as far as Electoral Commissioner Kirsten Kelly's concerned, it's a vital job.
It's certainly a responsibility and a right to vote in Australia, and every vote counts. And in the Northern Territory, our electoral divisions can be 5,000 to 6,000 people. So some of our margins at elections are less than 100. Every vote counts.
Letitia Lemke with that report from Australia's Northern Territory. Now, the Electoral Commission there is still assessing the impact of this scheme on the recent state election. However, nationally, similar schemes have contributed to an increase in enrolment amongst the Indigenous community from 75% in 2017 to more than 90% this year. But what about countries where elections can be more volatile? That's the sound of election time in Uganda. Large, noisy crowds turning out to support their candidate. But sometimes this boils over. According to the organisation Human Rights Watch, elections there in recent years have been marred by vote rigging, violence and intimidation. But some people think that women can provide the answer.
Let us not allow elections to divide us. Let's cherish peace in our homes, peace in our communities, and peace in our country.
That's a message from a group called the Women's Situation Room. They are a group of senior women from politics, business, and academia who've been trying to make elections more peaceful in Uganda. Elizabeth Luanga, the voice you just heard, worked for the UN for many years, and she told me all about the Women's Situation Room.
We are working to create an environment where the situation is peaceful, where voting is a democratic process that allows people to make their choices for their leaders in an environment where there is no fear, where there is no intimidation, where there is no violence. The Situation Room is a women-led initiative. It is part of the effort to get more women to be involved in peace processes and to take leadership in making peace and ensuring peace.
So what are some of the practical things you do to try and achieve this?
Around the elections itself, we do an assessment to gauge the level of potential violence. And we are able to identify what we call hotspots, where usually there is a lot of conflict already, or where you have two very strong candidates, and where there is hate speech and all of that kind of thing. What we do then is we mobilize the youth to orient them to peace, to resolve conflict, and we call them peace ambassadors. We then mobilize women and we orient them also to conflict resolution, and we call them peace advocates.
And then a week before the elections, an actual situation room is set up in the capital city, Kampala. A hotline is manned 24 hours a day by volunteers taking calls from people all over the country reporting problems.
A scuffle begin or somebody starts to create chaos and to frighten people, immediately our election monitors, they will call in and say in the constituency so-and-so in this village, this is happening. And immediately we decide whether this goes to the Electoral Commission. In this case, we go immediately to the police and they immediately contact their police officers in the area where this incident is happening. In the last elections, we received about 1,400 calls.
1,400?
Yes, reporting incidents of conflict. And out of those, 71% were responded to and prevented from becoming violent.
The Women's Situation Room was first set up for elections in Liberia in 2011 and has now been used in six other African countries. Part of their role is to talk to politicians about how to make elections more peaceful. But with mostly men holding the reins of power, I wondered if women can really have an impact.
Young people listen very well to women when they approach them, when they train them, when they mobilize them and get them to drop any action that they might be engaging in an election, like throwing stones, burning tires, creating chaos.
Why do you think it's particularly different with women?
We believe that these young people look at us as their mothers or their grandmothers and listen to us. And maybe it's also the way we communicate with them.
Elizabeth, do you think that more women might be voting now because of the work that you're doing?
Yes, definitely. We hope more women will vote and vote correctly. But we also are hoping that in a more peaceful environment, more women will want to go out there and stand and compete. Mm-hmm. Many women are deterred from going out there to compete in elections because of the lack of peace, because of sexual violence, because of the abuse that they receive. So we are hoping that in a more peaceful environment, many more women will also actually go out there and compete. We hope to see many more in 2026 than we did in 2016.
I'm probably right by saying in this scenario, more women would possibly mean more peace.
I would hope so. I certainly would hope so.
I would hope so too. Elizabeth Luanga of the Women's Situation Room in Uganda. And I'm Myra Anubi, and you are listening to People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service. This week, it's all about ideas that are working to make elections better, fairer, and more accessible. So far, we've looked at ways of getting more people on the electoral register and also how to make it safer for people to vote. But we haven't touched on the ways that technology can help. Estonia is globally recognized as a leader in tech. For over two decades, this Eastern European country has been using iVoting or internet voting in its elections. But what on earth is iVoting?
iVoting provides a convenient access to voting. It is a transparent and secure way for participating in the elections.
What you're hearing is an advert explaining how internet voting works. Now, this can be done from anywhere. At home, at school, perhaps even in an ice bath. Okay,
so as Estonians can do almost anything online, we're going to demonstrate how easy it is to vote from anywhere. I was originally going to vote from the sauna hot room, but Alex said that was too easy.
We need to do it from the ice hall.
We're going to do it from the ice hall instead.
So this is all, a video of British Estonian YouTuber Adam Rang and a group of friends in furry hats, but not much else. They're voting on a laptop while sitting in a freezing cold ice bath.
So that was voting from a toonie cell with lots of ice in it. Still very, very cold in here. So you really can vote from anywhere.
So here's how you do it. You download the voting app on your computer, log in with your national ID, which all Estonians have. Then you make your candidate choice, electronically sign it. This seals it like an envelope and sends it off into a digital ballot box. To find out more, I spoke to someone that was instrumental in setting up the system, Tanil Tamit of Tallinn University of Technology. I first asked him how iVotes are protected.
This electronic thing is like a double envelope so that the server software takes your encrypted vote out of your envelope and it's stored separately so that nobody can see or read or understand who has been voting how.
Right. So what you're saying is if, for example, I was there and I cast a vote, it would go in the system, but no one would know who I voted for.
Exactly. Because this internal actual vote is encrypted and it's only decrypted after it has been separated from anything which refers to you.
Now, one surprising thing about iVoting is that you can vote multiple times. Because you aren't voting in a secure polling station, there's a worry that some people might be at risk of being coerced. So voting multiple times allows people to change their vote when they feel safe to do so. But another worry might be external cyber attacks. Estonia borders Russia, and Russia has been linked with many such attacks. So how do they protect the whole system?
What could be attacked except the overall infrastructure? Well, people's laptops could be hacked. But this is very, very hard to do massively. And that is actually the reason why you have this special app and not voting by just using a browser. And we importantly have the ID card and the mobile version of that, which makes it practically impossible to just simulate being a right voter. So I don't think it would be in any way easy to hack into these. And even if somebody can, then it would be practically impossible to change the votes or to see who has been voting because of the cryptography issues. So I'm not very worried about that, actually.
I must say, you don't look worried at all, which is also reassuring.
The encrypted votes can only be decrypted with a key held by the National Electoral Committee. The parts of the key are divided between the members of the committee. In order to use the key to decrypt the votes, all its parts must be assembled.
But what impact has iVoting had on Estonian elections? Mikkel Solvak is from the University of Tartu.
In the very last national elections, the parliamentary election that was in March 2023, then 51.1% were using, so more than half.
Those are big numbers. Has this proved to be, beneficial for certain groups?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. In principle, what it sort of allows you to do is to vote from any location. So if you have either mobility issues, if you are, let's say, an elderly person who is not going out so much anymore, you can do it online really fast. You don't need to make the trip. Another thing is when we look at where do those votes actually come in from? Then Estonians are voting all across the globe. So people who have a much more sort of mobile lifestyle are also using it at higher rates. it helps to accommodate this mobile lifestyle as well, and at the same time still do your duty as a citizen, go out and vote.
Now, I'm from Kenya, and, you know, I think we would need more time if we were going to talk about the electoral process there. But then, just to understand here, is this the kind of system that could work in other countries across the world?
Definitely, given certain, let's say, infrastructure questions that need to be sort of solved first. It could bring benefits specifically for people who have otherwise difficulty accessing the polls, so who need to either travel long distances or when elections are organized in a way where there isn't a very good coverage with polling stations there. When you refer to, I mean, your own home country, and I mean, Africa is very high on mobile banking, and you think about it partially because of the physical banking infrastructure. Maybe it's just too expensive to run or ensure that everyone has equal access to it. And in those conditions, it might actually be quite beneficial.
Mikkel Solvak and Tanel Tamit there, guiding us through how iVoting works in Estonia. Now, at the start of the programme, I did promise something a little out of this world when it comes to remote voting. And what could be more far-flung than space? With astronauts currently circling the Earth in the International Space Station, I was wondering whether they get to vote. And as it turns out, they do. Astronauts Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, who are stranded in space until next February, are voting in the US presidential elections.
I sent down my request for a ballot today, as a matter of fact, and they should get it to us in a couple of weeks. And absolutely, yes, it's a very important role that we all play as citizens, is to be included in those elections, and NASA makes it very easy for us to do that. So we're excited about that opportunity.
You know, it's a very important duty that we have as citizens, and looking forward to being able to vote from space, which is pretty cool.
To vote, it's a bit like Estonia. A secure electronic ballot is sent up by NASA, and they fill it in with their credentials, choose their candidate, and it's encrypted and then sent back to planet Earth. The best part, though, they put low Earth orbit as their address when filling it out. That's all we have time for today, but you could listen to other positive stories we've come across on our podcast. Everything from building an island from landfill to eating invasive species. All you need to do is search for People Fixing the World wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you could also send us a voice note or message to our WhatsApp number with your thoughts, like Kirk from England, who listened to our podcast about reducing our mobile phone usage.
It's not that using the mobile phone per se is bad, you know. I mean, there are lots of useful things I do on my phone, like listening to podcasts, or doing work, or listening to music. Important thing is finding a way to make your phone a tool that works for you, and not the other way around, not making it, you know, something that just takes your time.
Well, make your phone work for you now. Save this WhatsApp number, +44 8000 321 721. We really do love hearing from you. And join me again next week, where we look at all things solutions. Until then, thanks for listening.